Good afternoon, and welcome to Live with Pastor Al. Got a Bible question? Wondering what to make of current events? Call now at 888-677-9673. That's 888-677-9673. Now open your Bibles, open your minds, and join in the conversation with your host, Pastor Al Davis.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Live with Pastor Al. I'm your host, Pastor Al Davis, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock here this afternoon. And we've got a program planned. We're waiting for our guest to call in, and as soon as we get him in, we'll get going with that. But let me remind you, check us out online, livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. And if you go there, you can find out more about me, more about the church. You can listen to past programs. You can listen not only to our Friday afternoon program, but also to our Sunday night programs. We're on every Sunday night from 10 o'clock until midnight, and you can listen to those programs as well. And I hope you're listening in the last half hour. I was able to fill in for Pastor Lutz on his program for the cause of Christ, and that was a blessing to be able to be there. And then, of course, Pastor Andrew Snacko will be coming up at 2 o'clock, and always a blessing there as well. So I encourage you to stay tuned for that. And right now, we're hoping for our guests to call in here. One of the problems with live radio is things don't always work out exactly as you plan, but As soon as our guest calls in, we'll get him on the air right away. And I just wanted to mention that we wanted to talk about Christian nationalism here, which is an interesting term that is being used right now by the left in order to, I think one thing they're trying to do with it is malign Christians. And the other thing I think they're trying to do, and malign Christians, to turn people against Christians who are advocating for their faith in the public arena. And the other thing is to intimidate Christians and to make us reluctant or even afraid of advocating for our faith in the public arena. So those are some things that we've got that we're going to hopefully look at here this afternoon a little bit. And while we're waiting for our caller to call in, I want to play two clips here, I think, and we'll play them back to back. And just to give you an idea of this term Christian nationalism and how it's being used today against us. So we're going to play these two clips, and after that we'll come back and we'll get into the topic here a little.
Mike Johnson and what he believes is one of the greatest threats we have today to the United States. I know these people.
Well, you're talking about Christian nationalism.
Absolutely. This is a bigger threat than Al-Qaeda to this country. Let me tell you something. They have Speaker of the House. They got probably at least two Supreme Court justices, maybe more. Right? Don't kid yourself. And people in the press have no idea who this guy is, how he was formed, what the threat is. And this is a fundamental threat to the United States. It is a fundamental. They don't believe in the Constitution. They'll tell you that. Mike Johnson himself says, what is democracy but two wolves and a lamb having lunch? That's what they really, really, really believe.
We hear words like Christian nationalism, like the new apostolic reformation. These are groups that you should get very schooled on, because they have a lot of power in Trump's circle. And the one thing that unites all of them, because there's many different groups orbiting Trump, but the thing that unites them as Christian nationalists, not Christians, by the way, because Christian nationalists is very different, mm-hmm. is that they believe that our rights as Americans, as all human beings, don't come from any earthly authority. They don't come from Congress. They don't come from the Supreme Court. They come from God. The problem with that is that they are determining men, mm-hmm. it is yeah, men, yeah. are determining what God is telling them. And in the past, that so-called natural law is, you know, it's a pillar of Catholicism. Mm-hmm. Catholicism, for instance, it's been used for good in social justice campaigns. Right. Martin Luther King evoked it in talking about civil rights. But now you have an extremist element of conservative Christians who say that this applies specifically to issues including abortion, gay marriage, and it's going much further than that.
Well, we just played two clips there talking about this term Christian nationalism, and you can see how the effort is there to take that term and to vilify Christians if you take a stand on the Word of God and if you put your faith in practice. Well, we have joining us today on the program my friend William Federer, who has been on with us before and probably one of the most prolific writers and speakers that I know of, and he has a great new book out, as well as a website, the American Minute, and he recently, back in April 19th, had one titled Christian Nationalism, which I encourage people to read or listen to. And Bill Federer, welcome to the program today.
Hey, great to be with you.
Hey, I'm so glad to have you with us. And just a few months ago, back in February, you were the keynote speaker at the Ohio Christian Alliance Freedom Banquet down in Akron. And great to see you there. And great to have you with us today.
Yeah, well, it's great to be with you. And there's three points with nationalism that we need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I talk about in my article, is that nationalism is the opposite of globalism. Nationalism depends on the nation, and Christian nationalism used to be called Christian patriotism, and every president encouraged it. But the first point is nationalism is the opposite of globalism. Believe it or not, there are people called globalists that want a one-world government, Klaus Schwab, George Soros, and they hate people that want to preserve their nation, so they want to vilify them. Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum produced a video, Agenda 2030, where he said, "You will own nothing and be happy." Sounds a lot like Karl Marx's Communist
Yes.
Manifesto. The theory of communists may be summed up in a single sentence, abolition of private property. Okay, abolition of private property, you'll own nothing, sort of sounds like the same. And so they went global communism is what they want. They want a one-world government where they control everything. The rest of us, you know, the founder of the World Health Organization, or the first director, was Brock Chisholm. And he said this: to achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their individualism, loyalty to family, traditions, national patriotism, and religious dogmas. Here he says, to achieve world government, we need to remove from the minds of men national patriotism. So there is a specific agenda from the World Health Organization and all these globalists to want to vilify anybody that wants to preserve their nation. And but the second point is nationalism depends on the nation. So in communist nations, socialist nations, Islamist nations, there's no individual rights. Some are more equal than others. If you're a faithful Muslim male, you're worth more than an unfaithful Muslim male, who's worth more than a Muslim female, who's worth more than a kafir infidel. In communist countries, if you're a CCP member in China, you're worth more than a common person. If you can contribute to the state, you're worth more than somebody that does not contribute to the state. Well, guess what? Our country is based on individual rights from a creator, that you have worth irregardless of what group you belong to. And irregardless if you can contribute to society, you have worth because you're made in the image of the creator, and he's not a respecter of persons, so everyone's equal. And to top it all off, it's government from the consent of the governed. In other words, you get to be in charge. That's sort of a good thing. You got rights the government can't take away. Freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, freedom of right to trial by your peers, right? Freedom to right to defend yourself, freedom from cruel and unusual punishment. They could use some of that for those poor January 6th people.
Yeah.
Lincoln's Gettysburg Address said, "Our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth." So you get to be in charge. So nationalism is bad in socialist countries and Islamist countries, but in our country, it's good to want to preserve our nation where we have rights the government can't take away and we're in charge. But the most interesting is Christian nationalism used to be called Christian patriotism. And every leader, Democrat, Republican, used to encourage it. You know, the word nationalism is not in Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary. It's not in there. They didn't use it. Patriotism is in there. Love of one's country and defending your country. And so it used to be called Christian patriotism. George Washington, in his address at Valley Forge, 1778, to the distinguished character of patriot, it should be our highest glory to laud the more distinguished character of Christian. So here's George Washington saying, be a patriot and a Christian. And then Lincoln, in his inaugural address, March 4th, 1861, said intelligence, patriotism, Christianity are still competent to adjust in the best way all our present difficulty. Lincoln mentioned patriotism and Christianity right next to each other in his inaugural address. And he was a Republican, right? Freed 4 million slaves with the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment. And then after the war, a Republican, Ulysses S. Grant, leaves the federal troops in the South to make sure that they're not, the freed slaves are not persecuted. But then the federal troops are pulled out. It's called the end of Reconstruction. And the Democrats take control of their state governments and pass Jim Crow laws, black codes, and have vigilante groups called the KKK. And they would do lynchings. And Tuskegee Institute studied and found there are over 4,400 documented lynchings. There were more than that, but there's at least that. And 1,200 of those were white Republicans down in the South registering the freed slaves to vote. And so Teddy Roosevelt, Republican, he's the first president to have a black man in the White House for dinner, Booker T. Washington. Teddy Roosevelt said, the mob lynches a Negro. Every Christian patriot in America needs to lift up his voice in loud and eternal protest against the mob spirit. So he says, Christian patriot, and we need to not be silent. We need to lift up our voice against this. Democrat Franklin Roosevelt passed out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms to all the soldiers in World War II. And he wrote the foreword. Could you imagine the president writing a foreword to a Bible? He says, as commander-in-chief, I take pleasure in commending the reading of the Bible to all who serve in the armed forces of the United States. So he's defending our nation, and he is giving out Bibles. At the time in America of the World War II, 93% of Americans identified as Christian, 69% Protestant, 24% Catholic, and then 3% of the country was Jewish. You had the code of conduct for cadets in the military. Every soldier had to attend chapel service, either Catholic, Protestant, or Jewish. So it's Judeo-Christian nation. Franklin Roosevelt said November 1st, 1940, those forces hate democracy and Christianity as two faces of the same civilization. They oppose democracy because it is Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy. I'd love for the mainstream media to call Franklin Roosevelt a Christian nationalist. And then Harry S. Truman, a Democrat. He's the one that instituted the National Day of Prayer. But Truman said that this is a Christian nation. And he had the a Christmas address where he lit the national Christmas tree in Washington, D.C. And he said, through Jesus Christ, the world will yet be a fairer place. And so you can imagine the media calling Truman a Christian nationalist because he said that this is a Christian nation. And then you have John F. Kennedy. He writes a letter to the president of Brazil in 1961. And he said, to both of us is entrusted the responsibility of guiding the affairs of a democratic nation founded on Christian ideals. So could they call John F. Kennedy a Christian nationalist? So Americans have been largely Christian and patriotic, but the other side doesn't like that. And so why do they call pro-life groups anti-abortion? There's no pro-life group that puts on its sign anti-abortion. Yet every single news article on the issue always calls pro-life groups anti-abortion. Why do they call them something they don't call themselves? Negative word association. Why do they call Christian patriots Christian nationalists? Negative word association. And actually, they're doing something called projection, where they're the ones that are setting up a nationalism. It's a woke nationalism. It's a very intolerant transnationalism. It's a Satanist theocracy, and they're pushing their agenda hard and fast, and they're accusing us of what they're doing. So in the Bible, Potiphar's wife accused Joseph of lusting after her when she was lusting after him. Nero set fire to Rome, but he blamed the Christians for setting the fire. I was listening to NPR radio April 19th, 2010, and David Axelrod, an advisor to the previous President Obama, he said, in Chicago, there was an old tradition of throwing a brick through your own campaign office window and then calling a press conference to say you've been attacked. Right? So they're the ones throwing the brick, but they want to blame you for it. Nancy Pelosi called it the wrap-up smear. Harry Reid accused Mitt Romney of not paying his taxes, and it caused such negative press that Romney lost the election. Time magazine fact-checked and found that Romney actually did pay his taxes, and they confronted Reid. And Reid said, I lied about Romney, but he didn't win, did he? So it doesn't matter if it's true or not. All you're going for is to smear your opponent so that they can lose. And so this is the tactics that we're facing. They're the ones that are wanting to set up a nationalism, but they're wanting to blame the Christians that founded the country as the ones to be afraid of. Christians don't want dominionism. They want freedomism. They don't want to legislate morality. They just want the government to stop legislating immorality. And I thought it was interesting that Politico had a reporter, Heidi Persibla, and
right.
She was on MSNBC.
And we had that as one of the clips there when we started.
Yes, yes. But here she had the audacity to say, who's a Christian nationalist? She said, Christian nationalists believe America's rights were granted by God and not the government, the Congress, or the Supreme Court. It's like, hello, has she read the Declaration of Independence? All men are God by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And so this article in the Gateway Pundit says this is a perfect example of why people don't trust the media. How is this woman even allowed to comment? So she's spreading misinformation about Christians. And Tony Perkins said the same thing. He is the head of the Family Research Council, and then together with the president of Catholic Vote, so you have Catholics and Protestants, they demanded an apology. And they said Politico's reporter failed to acknowledge that our own republic was founded on the belief that our rights come from God, not earthly kings or government. A revolutionary idea clearly articulated in the Declaration. And Ed Martin of Philadelphia Eagle said, Heidi Persibla isn't railing against Christian nationalism. She's railing against America's founding.
You're right when you said that. That's one of the reasons we had that played at the beginning of the program. We also played a clip by Carville. I think his first name there, drawing a blank for a minute. I want to call him George. James Carville. That's a totally different person, George. James Carville, where he basically said that Christian nationalists are a greater threat to America than Al-Qaeda. And you're right. We're being vilified, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. So here you have a country where you've had every single colony was started by a different Christian denomination. Virginia was Anglican. Massachusetts was Puritan. Rhode Island was Baptist. New York was Dutch Reformed. Connecticut, New Hampshire were Congregationalist. Maryland, Catholic. Pennsylvania, Quaker. And they had to learn how to tolerate each other. And then they tolerated Protestants. And then after an Irish potato famine, millions of Irish Catholics came to America, and they tolerated Catholics. Then there was a persecution of Jews in Bavaria. They tolerated Jews. And then they tolerated anybody that was a monotheist. And they drop the pebble in the pond. These Christians kept expanding tolerance more and more and more. And they finally tolerated the Islamist, the Satanists, right? These atheists. Mm-hmm. And the last ones in want to kick the first ones out.
Yes.
And they're coming along and they're saying, you Christians are intolerant. Like, hello, Christians are ones that came up with the idea of tolerance. It didn't start with Islam because there's still not tolerance today over in Gaza or in these fundamentalist Muslim countries. Didn't start with atheism. Look at these communist countries. They're not tolerant of opposing viewpoints. Tolerance started by Christians learning how to tolerate each other, and then it spread out to the rest. And so they're playing a word game, and because we don't know our history, we're letting them get away with it. But they're doing projection. They're blaming us for what they're guilty of.
Absolutely, and I know we're coming up on the last few minutes of the program. You've got a new book that's out, and I haven't read it yet myself. In fact, I've ordered it, and I'm waiting for it to get here. But Silence Equals Consent, and of course, subtitled The Sin of Omission, Speak Now or Forever Lose Your Freedom. And I'm really intrigued with the concept of this, because you address this idea of Christian nationalism in the book, and what we ought to be doing. And if you could take a couple of minutes to explain about your book there.
Yeah. So the 1600s, you have Calvinist Puritans and Baptists and Presbyterians and Quakers founding colonies in America. And these denominations have congregational style church governments where the congregation is involved. This idea of an ecclesia, the body, was brought to the forefront during the Reformation. And it was different than the existing church governments that were hierarchical. In England, the king was at the head. Underneath of him was the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Archbishop of York, the deaneries, the vicars, the curates, the rectors, the priests. And your relationship with God is through this hierarchical structure, and it's a clergy-laity model. The clergy does the ministry, and the laity is lazy and watches them. And the congregational model is where the pastor trains the saints to do the work of the ministry. And it only could have happened with the invention of the printing press, because now all the members of the church body can have their own copy of the Bible and read it for themselves. So it's not just everybody participating, it's people, church members that read the Bible participating. And so you have the idea during the Reformation is drawn from ancient Israel, the first 400 years out of Egypt before King Paul. So the most common form of government in world history is kings, Nimrod, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. And it's the hierarchical system. You're friends with the king, you're more equal. You're not friends with the king, you're less equal. You're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason, or you're a slave. The first country with millions of people with no king was ancient Israel. Around 1400 BC, they come out of Egypt, they come into the promised land. And for 400 years, there's no king. It's a total anomaly. It's literally the first instance in world history of millions of people and no king. How did it work? Everybody was taught the law, and everybody was personally accountable to God to follow the law. And it, so you have an opportunity to steal, nobody's around, and then you think, God is watching me. God wants me to be fair. God is going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in your head called a conscience. Mm-hmm. If everybody believes this, you can maintain complete order with no police. And it worked until the priest stopped teaching it. The priest stopped teaching the law. They go, what? Did they? Yeah. Here's Eli, the high priest. His own sons are sleeping with women in the very tent where the Ark of the Covenant is. Another Levite in the book of Judges with a silver graven image in the house of a guy named Micah. And the tribe of Dan comes along, steals the graven image, tells this Levite, come along with us. You'll be a priest to our whole tribe with this graven image. And you're reading the story. And say, what's the priest doing with a graven image? Isn't it one of the commandments?
I'm going to have to actually interrupt there a second right now because I hear the music coming up. We got about 45 seconds or so to go. But just so much information. William Fetter's with us here. And what is the American Minute, how people can subscribe to it, and the title of your book?
Right, AmericanMinute.com, and the title of the book is Silence Equals Consent, The Sin of Omission. And the same way you're silent at a wedding ceremony, you're giving consent. You're silent when there's wickedness going on in your community, you're giving your consent, and you're going to be held in as an accessory to the crime if you don't say something.
Absolutely. Well, Bill Fetter, I want to thank you for being with us today, and God bless you in your work. And I want to thank people for listening, and we'll have some of those links up on our website as well at livewithpastoral.com.
You've been listening to Live with Pastor Al. To learn more about Pastor Al Davis and Live with Pastor Al, visit our website at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. You can also listen to past programs at livewithpastoral.com. Read articles on a variety of topics by Pastor Al at livewithpastoral.com. Pastor Al Davis invites you to join him at the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio, Sunday morning at 11 or Sunday evening at 6. Or you can join us for our Friday night Bible study tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. The Bible Baptist Church meets at 4174 Wheatley Road, Suite 200 in Richfield every Sunday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m., and then every Friday at 7. You can contact Pastor Al by writing Pastor Al Davis at Post Office Box 452, Richfield, Ohio 44286. Or you can email Pastor Al at pastoral@maplenoll.us. Join us for more live conversation this Sunday night
from 10 to midnight.
And again, next Friday afternoon from 1:30 to 2, right here on AM 1220, The Word. Late Night Live with Pastor Al is brought to you by the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio.